Also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website, civicmedia.us.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. The Allen, Texas mall shooter may have scouted the location for weeks. That's according to investigators looking into his social media postings. Survivor Raquel Lee says the gunshots keep ringing in her mind.
That's the hardest, that you survive, that you made it out, but you relive it.
Three children among the eight killed in the Texas mall mass shooting. An unexpected gun law passing a Texas House committee with another stop before getting a full House vote. That bill would raise the age to buy a semi-automatic rifle in that state to 21. They have finished closing arguments in the Donald Trump rape defamation trial. Jury expected to begin deliberations tomorrow in E. Jean Carroll's lawsuit against Donald Trump. The former president denies the rape charge. Thousands remain evacuated in Alberta, Canada because of wildfires. Emergency management official Colin Blair.
We now have 98 active wildfires burning in the province.
This is ABC News. A grand jury expected to hear about that New York subway chokehold death.
A demand for murder charges against Marine veteran Daniel Penny, accused in the chokehold death of homeless street performer Jordan Neely on a Manhattan subway train last Monday.
There are some things that are absolutely not debatable. What's not debatable is that he put his arms around the man's neck and choked him to death.
Neely family attorney Dante Mills rejecting a statement from Penny's lawyers that their client acted in self-defense, while also pointing out Neely's, quote, untreated mental illness.
Okay, that's not an apology.
The New York City Medical Examiner ruling Neely's death a homicide, but so far no charges filed. Derek Dennis, ABC News, New York.
Russia clamping down on security for its annual World War II victory commemorations tomorrow. Moscow restricting the use of drones and ride-sharing services. At least 21 cities canceled Victory Day parades altogether, citing security worries. That move comes after drones were shot down last week as they approached the Kremlin. Andy Field, ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Efforts to overhaul Wisconsin's shared revenue system appear to be headed for a veto. Governor Evers issued a video statement yesterday to say the bill doesn't send enough money to local communities and that it comes with too many strings attached.
That's why I can't support the Republican plan as is, and frankly, I'll veto it in its entirety.
Evers objects to conditions the bill puts on places like Milwaukee to get all the state money they can. Former Governor Scott Walker tells the Journal Sentinel Donald Trump should be at the first Republican presidential debate in Milwaukee in August. New York Times reports Trump is likely to skip at least one of the first two debates. In sports, the Bucks are in the market for a new head coach. They fired Mike Budenholzer yesterday. The Brewers are at San Francisco tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the grave digger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always standard room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standard room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, outcome ticket.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
He's the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown.
Where can you go where it's always a standing room only? You ain't gonna find that in Chicago.
It's never personal, only politics.
You ain't gonna find that in Minnesota, standing room only, because you can go to the gumball machine, stick a quarter in there, I'll come pick it.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
That's the way it is, man. We love football, fans. Fans love us.
Weekdays 4 to 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You are never far away from your favorite local radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app, and we invite you to get social with us by following our network's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook pages. Want even more? CivicMedia.us.
And I had this conversation today, you know, when were Americans more fearful? Was it after 9/11 or is it now? You know, because my mind went back to 9/11 and look, I knew a lot of people who were, you know, here, take my privacy, take my rights, give us a national ID card, do all these, keep us safe. Because it was this foreign entity. It was the Islamo fascist, whatever that was. But this is our neighbors. This is people in our neighborhood. And it's kind of scary when you look at the reality that we've lost the ability to critically think. We've lost the ability to legislate. We've lost the ability to govern. We've lost the ability to talk to each other. We've certainly lost the ability to solve any problem, not even complicated problems. We can't seem to solve anything. And it's because we've been divided. You know, every conversation I have with a Republican voter, a MAGA hat, Trump supporter, an anti-Biden, you know, F. Brandon type, it's always the same. It's always the same. The messaging is absolutely the same because it's coordinated. It filters down. So when MTG, when Marjorie Trainwreck Greene comes out and says, you know, the shooting, evil forces. It was evil forces at play. But yet evil forces that tend to be on your side of the aisle with all of your rhetoric and all of your talking points and all of your mouthpieces. For instance, this shooter, and I'm never going to name the name of the shooter, but if you looked at this shooter's social media, he's got a Russian social media account, got a profile there. posting himself. I'm guessing they're his Nazi tattoos. Reconnaissance photos of the outlet mall that he shot up weeks prior to this. And posting, you know, stuff from right-wing mouthpieces. YouTube is full of right-wing extremists. And this is where the problem is. We're so far with the rhetoric. Because the only thing that gets any real attention is how crazy and how off the beaten path can you get. Again, it's never about solving problems. It's never about making things better. It's about my side winning. And I look at this shooter. I mean, you know, who puts a smiley face with a Hitler mustache on it and thinks that's okay? I know what it is. It's to get attention, because this guy, when you read a little bit more about him, you know, hates all the right people on the right. That's all I can come up with. Hates all the right people out there. Hates his parents. Hates society. Hates those BLM people. Hates Antifa. But loves the yellow smiley faced Hitler mustache clown. Self described incel. Hates himself. Hates women. A loner, he says. And you go, this is where mental health treatment can help. This is where maybe not having a group of angry young guys sitting on a social media platform talking woe is me. Maybe take a shower. Maybe clean yourself up. Maybe brush your teeth. Comb your hair. Learn how to talk to other people. Get out of the basement. And maybe you'll find a girlfriend. I mean, is this... This is part of what this is. The fact that there's a word for not being able to get a date is pretty remarkable to me. But the bigger part of this is there's a culture being created where we have to take polar opposite sides. There are no adults anymore in the room going, no, we've got to move forward. You know, the extreme stuff put aside, for instance, because as I said, every conversation I have with someone who would vote for Trump or someone who would vote for DeSantis, it's always the same. It's always the same. They're taking over the schools. The liberals are indoctrinating our kids. And they go, you know, where is this? Because there's porn in all of the books. And this is where, again, critical thinking comes into play. There are some books that have come forth that you go, yeah, that probably shouldn't be in the classroom. And we should have a mechanism to get that out. But it's not all of them. It's like anything. I can pick an extreme anything and then paint with really wide generalized brushes and say that it's all. And this is what these Moms for Liberty groups are doing. That's what the moneyed interest behind this is pushing, to get you to hate public education because there's a book on the shelf that may talk about genitalia. And that's bad because, you know, we don't want kids knowing that they have body parts. We're okay with them killing each other, but body parts, not so much. And this has really sparked the fear, the outrage, because we have to be an outraged society, to where now you've got, you know what, 28 states that have passed at least 70, 75 parental control bills of what teachers and students can say and what they can do. We're micromanaging the education process. And why is that important? That's important because we don't want critical thinkers. Remember this. Evidently, we now want, because parents are now, right-wing parents are now riled up, we now want puritanical little robots. And we want kids to learn about things in the worst way possible. And this is where my frustration comes in the moment that we're in. Because again, the party who keeps telling me how pure they are and they know what's best for our kids is the exact party doing the things behind the scenes that they claim. I've always said that, you know, anybody who is fixated on something where this is their cause, it's who they are. So, you know, if you're against drag shows and you're against, you know, I'm going to protect the children, chances are you got a problem here. And I point to Texas Representative Brian Slayton. Brian Slayton is one of those guys. He is dead set against the drag shows, completely against drag shows. Drag shows are bad. Against the transgender folks, bad. All of this, bad. Turns out, you know where this is going. You can come with me on this. Turns out, the representative, I don't know, he violated several of the congressional rules about providing an underage, you know, intern, or I guess it's a member of his staff, a 19-year-old member of his staff. And who chooses 19-year-old members for their staff? Well, I guess people who are going to give alcohol and have sex with them. I guess that's the kick here. You know, good family values guy. You know, somebody who, again, you know, always preaching the preach. Follow me. I know what to do. I'm pious. I'm good. So you got this 45-year-old guy chasing the 19-year-old. Now, look, you know, if that's your thing, you know, I think 19, you're an adult. You're going to make decisions. It is what it is. But don't be an absolute hypocrite about it. Now, this is a power position. There's a whole bunch that goes to this. But, you know, these folks who point their finger constantly are the ones that I have a lot of concern for, because there's a lot in that closet that I have to worry about. To where if we could, I don't know, sit down and talk about things and come to an agreement. For instance, I had a conversation this past weekend with someone who thought they had me. They said, well, you know, tell me what you hated about Donald Trump. And I went through things I didn't like that Trump did. And I was very honest. You know, this Twitter account, you know, the kind of craziness that he projected out of the White House. I don't think he was very good at following through. The only thing he got really done was massive tax breaks for the very wealthy that are now expiring on we, the working people. He ran up a lot of debt. He mishandled the pandemic. We could go on, and I couldn't go on for a while. His deregulation of safety in many industries, I think, was going to harm and kill people. And then he thought he was going to get me. Oh, okay, well, we know you don't like him. He, well, name some things you like about him. And I said, well, you know, to be honest, I think he did okay on the USMCA. I was happy with that. I was happy with the fact that, you know, in Mexico now labor unions are the law and independent unions are the law. I think that was good. I think the tariffs on China were a step in the right direction. Would have liked to seen a much bigger plan. I think, you know, the fact that he kept us out of war, he didn't start any new ones, which I was fearful that his bravado and his behavior might. I was okay with that. And this person was like, he had nowhere to go because he thought that I'm in the camp. And I'm going, no, look, I can look at every president throughout, you know, my lifetime and go, there were good things and there were bad things. The difference is how did the good and the bad weigh for we, the working people? That's where my mind went and where it goes. And where this person just couldn't understand that. And I said, issue after issue, it comes down to how do we fix the problem? How do we come to a solution? Because again, the first thing, well, he has nowhere to go, so they default back to what's being shoved down their throat from the outrage candy machine. It's coming back to the transgender issue, to the bathrooms. It's coming back to gay marriage, and it's all it's the talking points. And when I tried to have a rational back and forth and say, look, there are things that we should be talking about. There's things that I don't agree with. There are things that I agree with. For instance, you know, I'm a firm believer in people pursuing their happiness. Whatever it is you want to do with your life, God bless you. Do your thing. Or don't. As long as it doesn't affect me or anyone else, you have the right to do whatever you want. Now, in those areas where it does affect others, that's where we have to come to some kind of discussion, some kind of closure, some kind of policy. And it's not 100% one way or the other. That's not how this game works. And there was no ability to have that back and forth. And I'm hoping that we get to the point very soon, because I fear what's coming is horrible. I mean, you look at the AI situation that's coming up. I fear we're in a generation, we're going to have kids who can't write a sentence, let alone think about a sentence. So we had better figure out quickly how to talk to each other again and call out these extremists, the fringe, because the fringe is going to drive us over the cliff. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Love to have one of those conversations with you. Let me know what you think. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Ted Cruz is back at it again. Evidently, Ted thinks that they're going to be able to impeach Biden because he believes, and again, this is my problem with the believer crowd. He believes there's evidence. He hasn't seen it, but he knows it exists. And here's my problem with this. Again, there's so many things going on. There's so many things that need to be addressed. And yet Ted Cruz is spending his time pushing this fake narrative that somehow, Joe Biden, you're part of this criminal syndicate that's making all this money. And again, if there was evidence out there, the right-wing spin machine would be spinning it. So we know this is a pile of BS. But the thing that's frustrating me is did not hear Ted Cruz mention one thing about a worker in Texas who died of heat exposure. This is one of those things that blows my mind. There was evidently Tesla is building one of these big gigafactories or one of these giant facilities. And they had a contractor, building this facility in the Texas heat. And the report comes out that says that the body temperature of this guy was 106.4. 106.4. He literally melted his organs. He cooked himself. Now, again, Texas has no laws that mandate breaks. There's none of that. Texas is a rat to work state. So you got the rat to work until you work yourself literally to death. And as I was reading through the story, my mind is going, how do you allow yourself to get into that situation without saying, hey, you know what? I'm not sweating anymore. Whatever. How do you allow that? And look, I understand the Texas heat is literally a killer. How do you not have laws to protect people in that way? Well, because it's Texas. They don't care about people. It shows in their policy. And look, Texas isn't the only state in the country that doesn't allow workers to take breaks, that doesn't mandate it as part of the law. People often, this is what I find interesting. I get a lot of responses from people going, every state mandates you have to have a bathroom break. And no, they don't. Every state makes it mandates you have to take a lunch break. No, they don't. A lot of states have none of those because, again, it's back to employer-employee relations being master and servant relationships. You worker, you work for me, I own you, you do what you're told. You have no rights once you walk across the threshold of me paying you. And it's this kind of stuff. And look, thousands of people die every year from work accidents. We don't seem to be all that concerned about it. And I don't think we're going to get all that concerned about this. But if climate change is going to continue to happen and nobody seems to really care because we don't seem to be doing enough, get ready for this kind of stuff to continue to happen. It's frightening. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are you?
I'm totally insane. How are you?
I am. I'm angry over this story.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I just wanted to say, you know, between these so-called Moms for Liberty and what liberty they're trying to achieve, I guess, is the liberty to make everybody as ignorant as they want them to be, and then these laws that don't protect workers. I'm telling you, it's like we're living in one of those dystopian novels.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 60 Minutes had the story that we've been talking about for about a month now. The PSSI people hiring 13-year-old children to kill the to clean the machinery on the kill floor of the meat processing plants. They finally came around to that, and you know, some of the words that came out of from the regulators, like, we didn't believe it could possibly happen. You know, not here, not to us, and here they are, 102 children that they identified, and the woman said it's probably much higher than that. Those are the only ones they found.
Exactly. It's just. It's totally uncalled for, especially, and the part that really blows my mind is you have all these right-wing people that are claiming they're so patriotic and we're the greatest nation on the face of the earth that's ever been, and yet they're doing everything in their power to make us a third-world country worse than Russia. It's just uncalled for. We need to get out and vote. Like, our lives depend upon it, because they do. But you have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, at the end of the day, it's going to come back to voting. It's going to come back to us deciding what direction we want this country to go. Are we okay with the polarization? Now, I know, we've got our no labels people. We're going to bring moderation back. I'm not talking the kind of Joe Lieberman kind of moderation. But we do have to have conversations about where we're going forward. Or are we? You know, I was reading a piece yesterday that said, you know, in order for Democrats to take the Supreme Court back, it's gonna take like till 2065. And you go, I actually don't want the court to be one side or the other. I want the court to be the arbitrator of the laws, to where the law is what matters. What's happened is the Federalist Society and right-wing money, billionaire money, has turned our court into what it is. And back, seriously, back to what it is. Do the moneyed interests get what they want, and the rest of us, well, not so much. And our court is now hyper-ideological. Our court is now hyper-corporate. Our court is now theocratic. And I don't know when... that changes. Not in my lifetime. I'm ready to see the reality that in my lifetime it's going to be bad idea after bad idea, bad ruling after bad ruling, and we're going to end up being part of the history that people talk about in 100 years ago. Wow, that was a horrible time. The Roberts Court was a horrible. It's right up there with the Lochner Court. When bad things happened. The question is how much of this are we willing to put up with? And what are you going to tell your grandchildren about this moment? Which side of history were you on? Which side did you find yourself? And every generation has to ask that question. Which side am I on? We've been sold this idea that the other side is evil. That don't talk to them. They're evil. Don't talk to your neighbors. They're bad. This is how they divide and conquer. And this is how, again, we end up getting screwed again and again and again. For me, the economic part of it is horrible, but the social part of it is just as bad, if not worse. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your podcast, you'll find ours. We'll take a quick break. Right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2007. That was the day 7,000 workers at Northrop Grumman, a shipyard company in Pascagoula, Mississippi, went out on strike. Grumman is one of the largest defense contractors in the world. The workers were members of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 733, and the Pascagoula Metal Trades Council. They were still reeling from the ravages of Hurricane Katrina just 2 years earlier. The hurricane had devastated the Mississippi Gulf Coast and sent prices for housing skyrocketing. But while workers suffered, Katrina brought $3 billion in federal contracts to Northrop Grumman to repair hurricane damage. Despite this, Grumman proposed a four-year contract for the workers with no raises and increased healthcare costs. For many workers, this did not sit well. They knew the company had received massive government contracts, but still was not willing to treat workers fairly at the bargaining table. The union members rejected the offer and voted to strike. The company came back with a proposal offering small raises, which did not keep pace with the cost of living. The strike was called. For 4 weeks, workers marched and manned the picket line. During the strike, the company cut off the workers' health care coverage. The company then offered slightly higher wages and reduced the increases to health care coverage. Although the proposal was not enough to keep up with the soaring local cost of living, union members voted to end the strike and accept the offer. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
I'm a child of privilege, not the privilege of money. I come from a family of small-town working people. But it was my privilege to grow up in the public schools of Denison, Texas. There I received the rich blessings of dedicated classroom teachers, a diverse student body, playground socialization, librarians, coaches, cafeteria and custodial workers, student politics, vocational training, and a deep appreciation for the unifying value of community and the common good. That's why I'm flabbergasted by today's clique of corporate profiteers, theocratic zealots, and laissez-faire knuckleheads who are lobbying furiously across the country to demonize, defund, and dismantle this invaluable social benefit. If ignorance is bliss, they must be ecstatic. Public schools do have some real problems. Politicians constantly slashing education budgets. Professional burnout created by understaffing and low pay. The devastating strain of a killer pandemic. And a new normal of assault rifle murders. But the profiteers, theocrats, and knuckleheads aren't interested in those. Instead, focusing on what they say is the fatal flaw in public education, teachers. Yes, the claim is that diabolical educators are perverting innocent minds by teaching America's actual history, showing students that the full diversity of humankind enriches our society and presenting our earth as something to be protected, not plundered. And worse, oh my gosh, many classroom teachers are union members. So teachers suddenly find themselves political pawns in the GOP's culture war. Our schools are a cesspool of Marxist indoctrination, squawked Senator Marco Rubio. And Donald Trump squealed that schools are run by, quote, radical left maniacs and pink-haired communists. This is Jim Hightower saying, these right-wing chicken littles are demonizing America's invaluable educators because they need someone for people to hate, providing cover for their unpopular plot to privatize education.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Mitch McConnell has come out and said that there's no secret plan in the Senate to bail out the White House. No, no, he said that the White House and the speaker's teams need to sit down and settle it. He's not going to help on the debt ceiling, not even a little bit. And my first thought is, I don't know, if you're a U.S. senator, I mean, do you not want the country to do well? Isn't this one of those moments where you're kind of pushing both sides a little bit more than just saying, I'm doing nothing? Or is this doing something? I'm here to answer that question. I've asked former U.S. Senator from Alabama, Doug Jones, to come share his thoughts on the whole debt ceiling debacle. Doug, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it's always great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So am I too hard on Mitch McConnell? My view is he's just making it worse. Or is this how McConnell motivates?
Well, I don't know if it's how he motivates. I mean, I've yet to figure that out with Senator Mitch. But I will say it is a complete abdication of his constitutional duties. The president of the United States, at least unless there is some constitutional challenge, which may be in the works if they don't get something out, the president can't raise the debt ceiling. Only the Congress of the United States can do that. So everybody, you know, McCarthy and McConnell are putting this all on the president. But the fact of the matter is, it's their duty to get this done and get it done in a way that the president will sign it. And so I really think that Mitch is just, you know, I don't know why he feels like he can just sideline the entire Senate. That's not the way the Congress is supposed to operate. And they need to be in the middle of this. They can be very practical if they want to. But you are right about this, Rick. And that is that for anyone to basically say, I'm not going to get engaged in something that could have catastrophic consequences for the economy of the United States, catastrophic consequences for the global economy, much less the absolute full faith and credit of the United States of America, I think is shameful. I really think statements like that are shameful.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, here's the thing, and I see us in this moment, and maybe you'll agree or disagree because I really want your thoughts on this. I look at the Freedom Caucus and many in the House, the House Republicans, as looking at this hostage situation as truly wanting to shoot the hostage. I believe there are people in the House that want to default, that want to touch the button, that want to blow this up and cause the chaos so they can blame Biden for it and a whole bunch of other ideological things. But then I see on the side of Biden's side where you go, you got to be the adult in the room and say, look, I'm not going to deal with children who are willing to destroy the country. At some point, we've got to end this. And there's talk around the 14th Amendment and him being able to do something there. There's part of me that goes, you know, he just does that. So I want to get your thought. Is there a viable path to using the 14th Amendment to get rid of this or to set it aside to avoid this crisis? I'm curious.
Well, first of all, Rick, let me say I agree with you that there are those in the House and probably some in the Senate and Republicans across the country that would like to see this blow up. They want to see the economy tank. And that's a horrible thing to say. But I go back to 2020 and I remember specifically reading. And if you go back to the fall, spring and summer of 2020, what you saw was the beginning of inflation, the higher gas prices. And Republicans were gleeful. They were literally gleeful because you saw the president's numbers going down. You saw Democrats' chances in the midterms going down. And I remember specifically reading an article with a former member of Congress. He phrased it this way because then you had the war in Ukraine started, and all of a sudden things started turning around. People started looking at democracy more than they did inflation, and Democrats' fortunes started to turn around. And this former Republican congressman said, you know what, with inflation and higher gas prices, we had everything going for us. And then the war started. Well, everything going for us, my God, this was hurting American families. It was hurting the working men and women in this country and the children that they're trying to raise. But he was more concerned and gleeful with the prospect that the economy tanking was helping them in the midterm. That I think is there. The 14, and so I completely agree with you on that. Look into 2024. On the 14th Amendment, I think that that's a really interesting legal concept, a legal theory that has not been tested yet. We haven't had to test it, Rick, but the debt ceiling is routinely raised. I did it two or three times when I was in the Senate, when Donald Trump was president and the Republicans controlled the Senate. You didn't hear Mitch McConnell then abdicating his responsibilities. It's been fairly routine with some bumps in the road. But the way the Constitution reads, there may be the authority of the president to simply say to the Treasury, borrow more money and pay the debts and pay our bills and let somebody challenge that. I think it's really interesting. I would not like to see that happen. What you really want to see is the Congress of the United States stepping up to do their dang job.
Absolutely. But here's the thing. I think the Republicans are so dug in, and I think McCarthy has sold his soul to be Speaker to the point to where they're going to push this as far as they have to, and to keep him in the speakership, and that being self-serving. The country, be damned. Our economy be damned. Our role in the world be damned. I mean, I hear a lot of Republicans complaining about, Russia and China and India and Brazil. They're going to have their own currency and they're going to be the reserve currency. Well, how about we not screw that up and give them a reason to do that?
Right. No, you're absolutely right in that. And what I'm hoping is, one, I'm hoping that they can cut some kind of deal. I'm hoping that they would do. When I say cut some kind of deal, I still think the president is right to hold out for a clean debt ceiling increase and a debt ceiling bill and say, and tell the other side, tell the Republicans that, look, if everything you want to talk about, we will talk about that in good faith during the appropriations process because that's where it is supposed to be.
Yep.
And the president should talk to folks about that. Democrats in Congress should talk to folks about that. That's the way legislation is done, not with a gun to your head. So that's number one. The second thing that I think I'm hoping that they might do, if they can't cut some kind of deal right now, is simply to do a CR, a continuing resolution. I don't like kicking the can down the road, but in this case, it might help to kick the can down the road so that discussions in the appropriations process can be going on simultaneously with the debt ceiling discussions. They wouldn't be separate, but they would at least be going on in the same time frame and try to get it done all at once, something like that to see. Yeah. But, what I go back to, Rick, is this. So many of the same Republicans voted for the very debt that they say now that they don't want to pay. They voted for it. They caused a lot of it by passing the 2017 tax bill. It's really, I just can't understand any member of Congress totally abdicating their responsibilities.
Yeah, but I get your idea of passing a continuing resolution. My problem with that is we're still using the debt ceiling as a hostage tool. We're still using that. And I don't think that's what it should be. In every American household across this country, when the credit card bill comes due, you pay it. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. When your bills come due, you got to pay your bills, or your credit rating takes a dump and you have all of the negative consequences that come with that. I don't understand why Congress can't behave in the same fashion that they talk about every working class family in America having to deal with.
No, I agree. I totally agree with that, Rick. The only thing I'm saying is this. People are dug in, and we're living in a different world now than we've ever done. Had in terms of the polarization and the digging in and people really just going to war over things that they shouldn't be going to war over. And I'd rather see a CR like that where they can talk on similar tracks at the same time during the appropriations process and hopefully the economy not get destroyed.
Right.
The alternative is to the for there not to be a debt ceiling raise, the economy go to hell in a handbag with apologies to your wife, and that's going to be a real problem. That's going to be a major problem, and we don't want to see that happen. We've got to figure out a way to prevent that. And that doesn't mean giving in, but you've got to make sure that if there is any way possible to avoid that kind of economic collapse, we really need to do it, because in the end, it really won't matter who caused it, because people are going to be angry at everybody.
Yeah. No, and look, and the people at the bottom are going to be the ones who suffer the most. I understand that, and I get that. But, you know, there's a point at which you got to go, an adult has to step up and say, this kind of ticking bomb has to stop. It's not good for our position around the world. It's not good for our economy. It's not good for working people. It's just, it's something that should be abolished. Is there a way to get rid of this? Because, you know, again, I go back to, and this is the last place I want to finish on this, because there's part of me that goes, maybe if you do take this into the Supreme Court, which has been a very corporate court, you know, their decisions have come down on the side of the Chamber of Commerce much more often than not, that this would be a corporate decision to not hold the economy hostage, not screw over corporate America or working people. This could be a, and I hate using the win-win frame, but it could be one of those things where the sane people go, no, this is just bad. We should stop this.
No, I think it's a legitimate legal issue about the 14th Amendment and whether or not we can default when we've got the ability to go forward one way or another without legislation. I think that's a legitimate issue. I can't predict what the Supreme Court would do because, yes, it's been a very business-friendly court. At the same time, it has now become a very, very political court. And so if they, like I'm afraid that they have done in several cases in the last couple of years, decided it on politics rather than on the Constitution, then we could be in trouble.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes. I'm hoping Biden does what I want him to do and say, no, we're not giving in. We're not caving. We're going to pay our bills like adults. You children sit down. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with former Alabama Senator Doug Jones. I want to get your thoughts on this. I saw over the weekend the story coming out of New Hampshire. New Hampshire has become evidently the first state in the country to protect interracial marriage. Didn't think we had to do that. And now I see your state of Alabama, the Democrats in that state are abolishing the mandated LGBTQ caucus, the youth caucus, I guess the Hispanic caucus. What's going on? I mean, I thought this stuff was decided.
It should have been, Rick, and it is really demoralizing for Democrats in Alabama to see what the party leadership is doing. And that's what I'm saying. This is not the Democratic Party per se. This is party leadership who is just continuing to try to keep control. They are angry because we made the party more inclusive back about 4 years ago, and they didn't like it. They felt like it took away their control and their power. And it's a small group. This is not a major group, but they have influence with others. And it's really too bad. I mean, the Democratic Party in Alabama is just like it is around the country. We are should be a party with a big tent, that we're inclusive, that we celebrate the diversity. We celebrate the voices. We give opportunities for all people to participate. And what's happened in the Democratic Party of Alabama with this small group of the leadership is they've just done away with that. We spent a lot of time trying to get these caucuses into our bylaws so that we could bring in youth. I mean, Rick, but prior to 2019, when we really went to bat for the youth especially, out of the over 200 members of the state Democratic Executive Committee, there was only about 19 or 20 that were under the age of 35. Look what's happening around the country. Look what happened in Wisconsin. Look where things are headed. It is the youth of this country that are bringing the Democratic Party back. And for some reason, the Alabama Democratic Party leadership decides, they just don't know enough. We just don't care. We don't want to include. We want to be able to control them and not give them a voice. Same with the LGBTQ community, Hispanic, Asian Americans. It's really sad. A lot of people are angry about this, and so I'm hoping it will not stand.
Yeah, it's, you know, look, there's a lot of things that I don't agree with on the extremes. But everyone should have a voice. And the Democratic Party is supposed to be that big tent wherever. So this seems to go against that ethos of, you know, the part of the big tent party. So I thought it was interesting that coming out of your state.
Well, the irony is we Democrats have been complaining consistently over the last couple of years about efforts from the Republican Party to suppress dissenters, to cancel people like Tinkerbell when they speak out against you. We have been speaking out against Republican efforts to suppress voters, making it harder to vote, not giving people the voice. And now in Alabama, this leadership of the party has done the exact same thing with the very constituencies that are helpful to the Democratic base and helpful to the party. It is beyond it is beyond something that people can understand. It's just beyond words as to why they're doing this. And it is just an old guard wanting to hang on to control and not releasing it. We see it, you know, Rick, we see this in institutions across the country. We see it in law firms and accounting firms and medical practices. When the founders of the firm and that really built the firm decide that they just don't want the younger generation coming in and telling them what to say. They would rather burn the house down. And that's what's happening in Alabama. They have decided that they are likely to burn the house down before they would relinquish control. We'll see what happens.
We'll see. Doug, I appreciate the time. Keep up the good work. I look forward to having you back again real soon.
All right, Rick. Great to be with you as always, buddy.
Thanks so much. Our good friend, former Alabama Senator Doug Jones. Going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1863. That was the day that Division 1 of the Brotherhood of the Footboards was founded in Detroit, Michigan. By the next year, they had changed their name to the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers. In the early years of railroad transportation, the men who worked on the rails worked long hours under tough physical conditions. Any attempt to organize or strike was brutally crushed. The engineers had attempted to organize as early as 1855, but the effort had failed. Convinced the workers needed to join together, William D. Robinson, an engineer who worked out of Michigan, called a meeting. 19 men gathered at his house in Marshall, Michigan. The meeting laid the groundwork for forming a union. The next month, a dozen engineers met in Detroit and elected Robinson as the leader of their new organization. The Brotherhood set up its headquarters in Cleveland, Ohio. Over the summer, they began to organize more divisions. Soon, 10 locals were established across Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. The next year, the Brotherhood held its first national convention in Indianapolis. The Brotherhood became one of the Big Four labor organizations of railroad workers, alongside the trainmen, firemen, and conductors. The engineers established labor banks and printed a journal, initiatives that helped build their strength. These early railroad brotherhoods were, for the most part, only open to white men to join as members. Working on the vital transportation lines that moved the nation's goods and people gave the Brotherhood leverage at the negotiation table. The Big Four won gains in working hours and conditions that helped to pave the way for unions in many other sectors of the economy. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'm still hoping Biden acts the adult in the room. And as I said, you know, at some point, this debt ceiling thing got to go. The time to argue about spending is before you spend it. That seems logical to me, but it is what it is. Let's go to the phones. Got David in Milwaukee on line one. David, how are you?
Good evening, Rick. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Anytime. What's on your mind, brother?
So in reference with Mr. Doug Jones in regards to just raising the debt ceiling, what have you, the problem is this, and this is where you got the brass tacks hitting. Now, everyone talks about the national debt, like at $31 trillion and change. It's going to be 32 in the, probably a little past summer. We have to look at the unfunded liabilities. And I suggest to people that you're listening audience, go to the U.S. National Debt Clock, and you will see that we have $187 trillion of unfunded liabilities.
Yeah, that's if, hold on, real quick. That's if today everybody who is owed anything cashes in at this moment. That means, you know, 20-year-olds who are in the workforce, if their Social Security were to come due today, it would be right. What it is. A lot of these payments are decades into the future, just so we're clear.
Right. No, okay. Fine. We'll expect. But the number is astronomical, is my bigger point. And I do believe, and now with interest rates going up higher, and they're going to still continue to go up because we still have inflation, the interest alone yearly on it now is up to $560 billion, just on interest.
Yeah, and
that's paying for nothing.
You're right, but it's not paying for nothing. A lot of the money that was spent was investments in our infrastructure, investments in education. They were investments that were made that are paying dividends to the money being loaned out to we the people. I mean, this is a complex cycle here, David, and you understand this. I know you do.
Right. I understand that portion, but there is a point of no return, and we really do. We do have to factor in. We have to rein in spending somewhat. We have to.
Yeah.
And we also have to factor in that, okay, you know what? There's needs and there's wants. And we have to prioritize what those needs and wants are.
We don't disagree on this, David. We don't disagree.
Right.
We don't disagree that we should be spending money judiciously. And I hope we don't disagree that we should be raising revenue. The fact of the matter is we have created the largest billionaire class in the history of civilization with the most massive redistribution of wealth from working people to a billionaire class that was created from 80 onward. So, I mean, a lot of our problems are the fact that we aren't bringing revenue in, David.
Well, so if you look at, this is what I would say to you in regards to that. So keep in mind, if you're a wealthy person, money can move anywhere it wants to. Wealthy people will move to where they know it's going to be accessible.
But it wasn't always that way, David. And this is where I've always been a supporter of putting capital borders up. If we're going to have borders with people, if we're going to have borders for goods, we should have borders for dollars. We tore that down during the 80s. Again, more Reaganomics. This idea that money can move across borders, where we had strong capital borders in the past, which made it so that people didn't move out of the country and hide their money in offshore accounts.
And to your point, I mean, we are a global economy now.
We've always been a global economy, David, always.
Yeah. Well, we
fought a revolutionary war against the East India Trading Company. Come on, David. I understand where you're getting at.
Okay, so what I mean by that is, Rick, is that if you look at the world population as far as all the different economies in the world, we're much more synchronized with parts of the world that we had no access to back when the United States was, you know, just starting off. That's my bigger point. So we have a lot of industries that are throughout all over the world. Could be Africa, Asia, what you name it.
I agree.
And so, you know, so we do have that, but the flip side is, Rick, is that what I'm worried about is that, you know, with the amount of money that we are spending currently, I look at it from the standpoint, now I reside in Wisconsin, and, you know, there was concern that, you know, because we had tax cut in our states under Scott Walker. People, I'm sure, remember that.
Got 30 seconds.
Gloom and doom. Right. And at the end of the day, our state of Wisconsin actually has a surplus of $7 billion. The reason being because Wisconsin actually was attracting businesses back to the state that were kind of shunning us before. So there's a happy medium. You have to make it where you're competitive, and you want growth, and you want to bring business to your location. In this case, I want to bring it back to the United States as much as possible.
I hear you, David. I appreciate the call, man. Good stuff. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app. ABC.